I want to do some preliminary things before we jump into the actual topic, and that's I wanted to point out some papers on you that might be important to some of you in terms of where you are in life, about normally of a group this size and normally of people that are in parachurch work. About 20% of you will be in a major boundary right now, in either in it or entering a major boundary. That is, moving from one development phase in your life to another. So a paper that I think will be very helpful for you is boundary processing. I'm on page 2. Boundary processing. It might have run out. If it ran out, just... There we go. Yeah. Especially if you're in a boundary, get this one if you will. Most leaders will go through 3 or 4 major boundaries in their lifetime. It's a passage from one development phase to another. And so we've had the opportunity to study lots of boundary phases, what happens in people's lives when they go through them. And so this paper sort of lines out what we found, and it's very helpful to get an overall feel for what's happening to you when you're in the midst of a boundary. Because it doesn't look all that great when you're in the midst of a boundary, but if you can see the process and what happens, it can be helpful. So that's one. A second one that is also helpful, because there'll be another maybe 30% of you that are grappling with the issue of how I and my spouse should minister together or not together, how it should operate. So there's one in here called social-based processing, in which we've studied actually how we've looked at social-based processing both from the single standpoint, looking at patterns for singles and how they cope with the 4 major social issues. And then we've looked at husbands and wives, look at married folks, and look at the basic patterns of how do they actually cope in different ways. And the thing that's come out of that social-based study, one, recognition of the 4 social-based functions that have to be fulfilled. They have to be met somehow in whatever relationship you're in. That's been helpful, particularly to men who don't even know that some of those social-based things exist. You know, it's really helpful to recognize that there are some needs their wives have that they may not even know about that are in there. So that's a helpful thing. And then the other thing is the patterns, recognizing the different kind of patterns that people use to fulfill those social-based things. And there are a number of them. And the most important thing about that is that you can become proactive about the future patterns you want. Here we are now, and we're in situation and stages that we're going through over which we may or may not have as much control, but we can always be moving toward the social-based patterns we want as release comes in our social-based setting. So that's a helpful one for people. The one on the same page to the left right above it, paradigm shift, we've actually, one of the major things that God uses to change inflexible leaders to more flexible leaders is he uses paradigm shifts with them. So we bring, and most of us in this room qualify as pretty heavy, inflexible leaders. You know, leaders by nature are strong-willed. They have convictions. They wouldn't even be in the ministry if they couldn't raise their money, you know, so they got to be some strong and whatever. So the tendency is not to be very flexible in terms of ideation, new ideas. So one of the things God does is bring paradigm shifts. So we've studied them. How does he do it? What's he done with people? And we've analyzed them and defined a lot of things that happen in paradigm shifts. So that's a very helpful. Now, another reason that's helpful is because the major thing that you and I do in leadership is to influence people to go through paradigm shifts all the time. Whatever the paradigms are that we think are important, that's what we're trying to do, is take them through paradigm shifts. So the more we can learn about that, the better off we'll be. So that's another one that could be helpful for you. The isolation processing on the far bottom right of that same page too. Most of us, I don't know of any leader that I've ever been with that's in their 40s or above that either hasn't faced some sort of deep processing in life or they will face it. You'll face some deep processing in your life. So the whole concept of isolation processing deals with one of the major things that God does. Frequently, isolation processing is used to break a leader. And that's very important. It can be a turning point in your whole life. The rest of your ministry can be very different. So that's an important one to recognize along the way. And then for some of us who are in the end of the 3rd quarter, getting ready to move toward the 4th quarter, you know, we got 17 minutes left, you know, to do things. It's sort of important to know what are the legacies we really want to leave behind. What do we really want to concentrate on so that we can leave something behind that God can continue to bless? So this little paper on the right-hand side called The Ultimate Contribution is dealing with legacies. We've studied, we took 40 case study leaders who were effective leaders that left behind legacies, and we studied them and analyzed what were the kinds of legacies they left behind. And out of it came a typology, 12 kinds of legacies. And you'll recognize when you read through those, immediately three or four of those are you. And eight of them aren't you. You'll know it. You know, and you can say, well, wow, if this is what I am, the decisions I make should be in order to see these things actually happen. Question back there, Rusty? Oh, okay. No, the timeline and getting perspective out of your timeline, let's see where that one is. Yeah, second on the left. Let me just say what those are. The timelines, say like in the book, The Making of a Leader, or in the back of your manual, if you look way back in the back of your manual, there's a timeline. Those are generic timelines that are formed from comparative study of lots of lives. They never fit anybody. Okay? Pieces of them do, and you'll see yourself. What you want to do is construct your own unique timeline. You want your own timeline. You want your own development phases like the one I put up there for me yesterday. You want your own. Now, those things are helpful because they can give you ideas of what happens to people, but those are generic timelines, and I use them for teaching. But the most important thing is to have your own timeline, knowing who you are, your development phases, your subphases, and so forth. So the little one on the right, the timeline, the one at the top on the right, is just how to do that. Okay? How to do that. The one on the left, getting perspective, it includes the one on the right. It has how to do it in there, but it tells all about it. And this is the kind of paper that you want to read if you're helping others construct their timelines and helping them learn how to get the most out of them. I introduce three important paradigms in getting perspective using the timeline. And those paradigms are very important in terms of looking at life. So they're introduced in there. Does that help on that, Rusty?
Those of us who have done the timeline have not gained most that you can from that timeline, because there is just treasures of information if you go through it with someone who can ask you good questions and go through it. For instance, how does God tend to lead you? What are the patterns? And you're looking for new leadership. Look back how he's done that. Someone can help you identify and work through those patterns. How does God tend to use you? What kinds of situations, kinds of people? Those patterns begin to develop. Revelatory experiences in terms of revealing deep convictions, confirmation and revealing of gifting, how gifting is applied, many of these kinds of things. What kinds of alliances do you tend to establish? What are your work patterns and ministry patterns that God uses? Those things are to be uncovered from a good timeline. And to go through that with someone, if you haven't gotten that out of your timeline, that's a great resource that is still waiting to be tapped in mind.
Thanks, Bob. That's one of the main things I do in my mentoring. I do a lot of mentor counseling mid-career with people in terms of where they are in life and where they're going. And that's the first thing I do when they sit down. My appointments are generally an hour, 2 hours with them. And one of the first things I do is construct a timeline right before them and with them. Now, what I've found is that you can read that stuff and never, ever use it. It doesn't mean anything to you. One of the best ways to learn how to do that is to watch somebody do it. So what I do is I bring somebody in with me. I get permission from the person, then I bring somebody else that I'm actually coaching in how to do that and let them watch me do it. And then they can basically learn how to do that. Okay, I think I'm ready to move into the stuff for today. Okay, this is just for my own information. I need to know. You know, this is, I'm trying to conduct a survey on Christian organizations. And so I ask this question to every Christian organization, all the people in here. And of course, this is the top leadership in the Navigators. So this is a good question. How many of you buy at least 10 books a year? Raise your hand. Okay, that's pretty good. We need to get the Nav Press people up here so they can see that again. You know, that'll make them happy, I think, along the way. Okay. Now, more serious question. Yeah, no, that's all right. I mean, I didn't want to embarrass you, so I just asked how many bought them. How many of you have actually found a useful idea in what you read the past year? Okay. Let's have three of you share. Three people that have not said a word yet. Share a useful idea you got in something you read last year. Would you do that for me? Now, you just raised your hand, so you should be under conviction. You know that one of you should do it. Here we go. One back here. Harvey, what was the insight? Yes. Okay. Was this couple the couple that was transferring to Hawaii right at the Estes Park time when they had just lost? Yeah, I met that couple and chatted with them. Is that your daughter? Okay, I met them, yes. Okay, Roger? So it was a challenge directly to you in your communication. That's great. The second hour, I mean the hour and a half that we have, we're together after the break, I'm going to communicate with passion. Because what I'm talking about is really down here. So I'm going to tell you then. I'm telling you ahead of time. I'm passionate about what I'm talking about in that second hour. So you'll see that. Now, I'd like some female leader to share. They're all looking at each other or trying to stare some other way. Yes, ma'am. Hilda. Important insights. As a matter of fact, I almost have to along the way. That's good. Thanks for sharing. Who among you know a very good reader who's constantly reading new books and sharing with you something about them? Matt? Yeah. Don Bartel. Is it Don? Okay. Daryl Sanders. I'm going to have Daryl Sanders say a word in just a minute about this. I'm warning you now, Daryl. Here's the word you have to share. Sometimes some of us are not comfortable in reading books that are not written by Christian authors and trying to get information out of them. We're just not comfortable. We haven't recognized or haven't come to the place where we can say truth comes from God. And if it's truth, it's from God. Would you say a word on how you've dealt with that? Because you're certainly reading broadly in all fields. How do you handle that in your own life? How did you come about that? Could you give us a word on that?
I've always wanted to read outside the boundaries of what I thought I already knew, and to read books that I don't like that would have any impact on me. And so I take notes on the books as I go through and have the notes typed up. I use those for review on the way for
mm-hmm. You don't have any problems reading secular books?
I don't read as much fiction as I should.
No, I didn't want to think of fiction. I mean leadership, secular leadership. How do you handle that? Why do you not have a problem with that? Okay. Right from the horse's mouth. There it is. Got it. Okay. Who's our horse over here? Nate. There are three major goals of this session. One, I want to help you become aware of the importance of reading different books in different ways. Okay. Second, I want to impress upon you the importance of written materials as a source of information that can help you in your ministry. Number three, I want to suggest a model that you may want to use that can help you in growth projects. And the model is called, I call it popular, reading on the run. But what I'm talking about is reading along a continuum. Francis Bacon said, some books are to be digested. Some books are to be tasted. Some books are to be chewed. Now, I said it in the wrong order. It should be tasted, chewed, and digested. Okay? So I want to deal with that. If I were to ask you this question, what's the biggest hindrance to you actually using reading as a major learning source? What would you say would be the biggest hindrance to you actually doing that? Yeah.
Information overload.
Time. Laziness. Slow reader. Emotional tiredness. Those are all really true and important. What I want to suggest today is one of the biggest hindrances to us reading and using reading as a source of leadership is a psychological one. And it has to do with the way we were taught to read. When we were taught to read, we were taught to read every word. We first started with simple two-word sentences, then three and four, and then five. But we read every word. And eventually we built up to paragraph and then pages. So that we were conditioned to believe we had not read a book if we had not read every word in the book. So today, somebody asks you, have you read a book? And you bought it, and you opened and looked at the preface, and you started reading the first chapter, and then you put it aside. I'll get back to it. And you never did. And they ask you if you read the book, and you sort of feel guilty. Well, no, I haven't read it. So what I want to show you is that books can be read in different ways, and you can answer the question, have you read that book? Yes, I scanned it day before yesterday. Or you can say, yes, I did. I ransacked that book 2 days ago or 3 days ago. And you can have a clear conscience. You really did read it. And you may have spent 30 minutes in it, 15 minutes in it, and that's all you did. So what I'm talking about is reading books in different ways. Reading on the continuum. I've got two courses that have no single textbook that's any good at all. So people in those courses have to read 20 to 30 books. And there's no way they can read 20 to 30 books and read every word. So they've got to learn how to read, as I call it, on the run. So there's a continuum. There's scan reading, ransack reading, browse reading, pre-read, read, and study. Now, if any of you read The Art of Reading by Mortimer J. Adler. Yeah, what page is that on, Paul?
Page three.
If you've read that book, he's down here. He says, this is the way you read a book. But I'm going to tell you, you'll probably only do three or four of those in your lifetime that way. So what I'm trying to show is how to get something out of a book that can help you in the ministry without reading the whole book. Okay? So there's first thing you do is scan. You really need to learn how to scan because scan can save you lots of money. What you can do is when you're in a bookstore, you can scan it. You can do it in 15 minutes. You can scan enough to know whether you ought to buy the book and whether it's got something in there that's worthwhile. Sometimes you can scan it, maybe you can stay there 30 minutes, and you can get out of it what you need and write down what you need and you're out of there. That saves some money. So this is a good thing to help you. Scanning. Yeah, they love me. Okay. So, you know, I've got to get one of these little books. Is there another one? I put mine in my satchel. It's over there in that little book bag. But take a look at what you have to do when you scan, which is on page, the results of scanning. What are you doing? Where am I? Six results, page six. See that? When you scan a book, here's what you're looking for. Know who wrote the book. That means you know something about them. They're coming from a Reformed background, or they're coming from a parachurch evangelistic background, or they're coming from something. You want to know a little bit, because that's going to color how they write and what they say. You want to identify that perspective, one and two together. You want to know how the book is organized? So you look at the table of contents. How is it organized? It's organized to say what? What's it saying? Recognize what the author is trying to accomplish. What's he trying to do? You've identified where on the continuum you actually want to read this someday if you really want to follow up on it. That's the fifth thing. And then six, you make your decision. This is what I will do with this book. Okay, you can do that anywhere from 15 to 40 minutes, depending on the complexity of your book, maybe a little longer. This sounds simple when I tell you these six thrusts. It's not easy to do. You have to build up skill. You got to do it and try it. Okay? Scan. First thing. You may get out of a book all you need by scanning it. You may come up with a single important thing by scanning it. Or you may come up with a chapter that says, this chapter I need to read in depth, but I don't need to read the rest of the book. This chapter's got something in terms of something I'm interested in. That's what ransacking is. I'm interested in something, and that's all I really need to do. So they can ask you, did you read that book? Yes, I did. I scanned it the other day. And, you can say, and I got one thing out of the thing that's really important. Or, there's one chapter in there that made a difference for me. Or, you know, it wasn't all that helpful to me. Yeah. But you can say you read it. Okay, look at the second one. Ransacking, what page is that? Yep, 15 and 16. Write my notes. When all else fails, read the instructions. Okay, page 15, six possible results. There are two kinds of ransacking. We had a thief break in our home 3 years ago now. And he was very selective in what he looked for. He ransacked and he went right for what he wanted. Jewelry, the VCR, my CD player that my class had given me. You know, I really love those things. But ransacked. Things were turned upside down. He just got what he wanted. You know, and he was out of there. Okay, ransacking. Two kinds of ransacking. Open ransacking and closed. Closed ransacking says, I'm looking for one kind of thing. Does this book say anything about it? That's all I need to know. Does it tell me anything I need to know about whatever it is I want to ransack for? And you can ransack a book pretty fast and find out if it says anything about what you're interested in learning about. Now, once you've read a basal book is a foundational book on some subject that thoroughly handles that subject. Once you've read a basal book on a subject, you can simply ransack all other books that are on that same subject. Now, you can choose to go deeper than ransacking in any of those books that have stuff, but you can ransack them because you've got a framework to look for things. So there's open ransacking and closed ransacking. Closed is looking for a single kind of idea or some item. Open ransacking is looking for anything new about something, whatever it is. Two kinds of ransacking. Page 15, let's just look at those. You noted a new idea on a pre-selected topic of interest to you. You noted a contrasting or differing idea on a pre-selected topic. You determine that the book has nothing more to add to the subject that you already know about. You gain something worth noting. Fifth, you determine nothing of interest. Six, you've made a decision how much more you want to read it along the continuum. Okay? With that brief introduction, we are now going to practice. I want all of you to take out your books that you brought. And if you didn't bring a book, come up here and just grab one out of the box. There's a box of books up here. Grab a book. And I want you to spend 15 minutes scanning it. Okay? Yeah, it has to be one you haven't read before. Don't get one you already read. Answered all six questions, tell them yes, I did or didn't, or whatever you want to share about the scan. Tell them where you want to read it eventually, at what level on the continuum you want to read it eventually. Okay, listen up. Listen up. Obviously, you didn't have enough time. Obviously. But I want you to take 1 minute. Listen up. Take 1 minute, not to tell about the book, but to tell about your process for scanning the book. What did you do? Tell them, here's what I did. All right? Do that. 1 minute each. Okay. Look up here. I have one question for you. Have you read a book this morning? Two. You did? Okay. Now my question for you is, at what level really do you want to read this book? And I want to make a comment about it. 95% of the books that you need to read can be read at browse, ransack, or scan level. Okay? Only about 5% need to be read at pre-read, read, and study. Most books are not written in terms of an integrated theme. That is, a subject for which each section develops a major idea which contributes to the subject. Most of them are not written that way. So you don't have to read at this level, which is thematic analysis, understanding what is being said, why it's said, how it fits together. You don't have to read most books that way because they're not written that way. So you can read many books, scan, ransack, and browse. Now, each level to the right is nested. It assumes that you've done the one on the left of it at whatever level you wanted to do it. So when you're pre-reading, you've probably already scanned, ransacked, browsed before you start your pre-read. Although you can jump right into pre-read if you want to. Rusty? I hadn't thought about that, but in the next session I'm talking about, maybe I'll come on that because I'm hitting something along that line. And you can remind me again. Yes? Yes. Okay, let me say a word. We're talking about, in this method of reading, we're talking about reading books for information for ministry. When you're in college, you read books, you're going to be tested on them. So you got to read them different ways. Okay? Now, let me say a word further on that, though. You don't read biographies this way. We're talking about books for information for our ministry. Okay? You read biographies different. You read poems different because you want to feel them. You read certain writers different because of the way they use getting information for ministry. Okay? Now, at Fuller, where in a class people have to read sometimes 3,000 pages of reading, I tell them, read on the continuum. You read it any way you want to. I don't care how you do it. As long as you get something out of it that's important for you. Okay? So in my class, because I don't test on books, you know, they just are reading to learn. So they can use this continuum. Okay. There was another question? No, another comment. Cedric? Was it Cedric? Okay. Now, I can tell you how I read biographies, too. That's a whole other approach to reading. Somebody over here. A basal book. I don't know. Basal means foundational. A basic foundational book that covers the bases of whatever the subject is. And I don't know. I just know when I see one. And I can tell you, this is a basal book. You know, I know, and maybe some of you know. Answer back here. Not necessarily. No, a basal book on power for me was not a textbook. You know, yeah. Well, if you scan along here, you can tell. If you use this, you can tell a book's basal or not. Yes. And this is not a question-answer session. I got 2 minutes to finish up. You know, this we were going to do this in the second hour, and we canceled it out. So, okay. Authors care less if they get their royalty. They don't really care. Now, if you scan it and don't buy it, now wait a minute. Now, hold on. Good reviews will tell you books that are foundational. That's a good way. If I had time, I'm not thinking now because I'm thinking what I want to do in these last 3 minutes. If I had time, I could probably answer that question pretty good. So I'll work on it and maybe come back with an answer. I'm going to cut it off now, unless you just want to go through the break. We could go through. No, I'm going to cut it off now. Okay, but I just want to say a few comments. Amen. On page 67. Now, obviously, I've just given you a little taste of something that's a possible paradigm shift for some of you. If you really want to learn it, you ought to do something like I'm going to suggest back here. A buddy reading model. Okay, here's a buddy reading model. You find another person who wants to be committed to learning from reading the same way you want to be committed to learning from reading. And so the two of you covenant together and say, okay, let's hold each other accountable. Let's do some learning by reading. This year, why don't we read two books? That's not too bad for a whole year. And here's the way we'll do it. My reading buddy for 3 years was Denny Repko. Some of you will know Denny. Denny's in the he's in the California area. So here's the way Denny and I would do it. I'd say, Denny, you pick the book first. Now, obviously, Denny picks books that Denny's interested in, not the ones I'm interested in, you know. So it stretches me to read stuff that Denny wants to read. And when it comes my time to pick it, it stretches him because he's not wanting necessarily to read that. So one of the buddies picks the book that you're going to read and gives the assignment. So that means they've scanned and they've recognized the importance of the book, and they'll give the assignment, whatever it is. Okay? An assignment can be in-depth, it can be less, it can be whatever it is, but they'll put out the assignment. Then you read it, and then you have a time that you're getting together to close on it. Now, for Denny and I, we did breakfast meetings, and we met once a month. And when we got together, we knew that we were going to bring closure, which means we better do that work we said we were going to do. So it forced us into accountability. But yet it was tremendous learning. And it was fellowship. It was a kind of a peer mentoring thing that was going on. And then, of course, I was stretched in reading things that Denny wanted. And then he was stretched in reading things that I wanted. Now, that's a good little model. It's kind of a peer mentoring model. It has accountability in it. It'll stretch you. You can learn how to do this kind of reading, scanning, ransacking, browsing. You can learn how to do those things. And these things are not easy skills to learn. They're here, and you can learn them, but it takes practice to be able to do them well. Okay, now one last word that I want to say as a kind of disclaimer, and it's this. Not all people are readers. Not all people in here are readers that are in here. And so what you want to do is recruit to your weakness. If you're not a reader, then you want to pull somebody in your team that is a reader. Okay? That's simple. So you pull somebody in your team that is a reader, loves to read, enjoys it. So you recruit to your weakness and then you resource from your strength. You let that person that's good at that kind of thing be that kind of person for the team, if you have a team, or for you, if it's an individual thing. That's hard for some of us to do. You take ideas that they give us. They give you an idea and they say, this is a book that's great. Now, I know you're not going to read it, but let me tell you, this is an idea that you can really use. And then they mentor you in using that idea. So you don't have to read the book to get some power out of ideas that other people who know how to read books can get for you. Okay? So people are not readers. Don't be upset because you can't scan, ransack, browse, or you don't want to do it. Don't be upset. But be willing to recruit to your weakness and resource from strength. Okay? For example, in my Change Dynamics class last winter, I try to do some new thing that I hadn't done before. So in one part of the analysis, we're doing systemic analysis. When you're bringing about change in an organization, you've got to look at it from a systemic viewpoint, because a change brought here may pop up over here in something that you weren't expecting. So you got to look at systemic things. So this is a book that had been recommended to me, The Fifth Discipline, which you've had, didn't you have somebody come and lecture on it or something? Some of you did, I know. So, but it's, to be honest, it's not a well-written book in many ways, and it contains ideas that are powerful. So you don't want to miss the ideas, but you got to really, it's like my books, you have to work at it to get it out of it. That's what it is. Oh, I'm coming. I got to come back on you. I'm going to bring that in just a minute, Matt. And I'll close with that. I'm going to close with it. Okay? So I did this very thing. I recruited to my weakness. I said, okay, my teaching assistant for the Change Dynamics course last December, was Gail Pfeiffer-Hausman, who's one of my mentorees. And she's a real analytical, sharp brain, sharp person. And she had studied this book in depth because they'd used it there in an intervarsity ministry at Stanford campus. So they'd used it in their intervarsity ministry as they were analyzing what was happening in the ministry and so forth. So here's what I told her. I said, Gail, I want you to give a lecture, an hour and a half lecture. I want you to do it in this class. And I want you to identify for our class the 10 most important ideas in this book that they can use in terms of change dynamics thinking. So, she's my helper. And the most important idea, would you like to know what the most important idea is? It's the concept of leverage. If you can just get a hold of that concept, it makes a big difference in how you bring about change. I'll stop there and then just simply say this to Matt after that terrific introduction that I had yesterday. Matt said my books were not user-friendly. Do you remember that, anybody? Okay, that's a lie. Don't believe it. Yeah, I know. I was embarrassed. Here it is. Because I don't think he really understands the concept of user-friendly. So I'm going to tell you what the difference is. If a person wants to use my books, boy, they're friendly. They are friendly. They got Q headings. They got summaries. They got exercises. They've got glossaries. They've got indexes. They got everything if you want to use it. Now, they won't motivate you. You got to be motivated to want to use them. They're user-friendly. Now, the difference in user-friendly and what Matt's talking about, he's talking about seeker-sensitive. See? My books are not seeker-sensitive. Okay. Take a break.